Okay, welcome everyone. We'll go ahead and get started here after lunch. Hopefully no one's going to enter a food coma during the talk. If you see anyone nodding off, we'll have random questions fired at the class. My name is Stephen Barron. I'm a lead program manager on the System Center Virtual Machine Manager team. There's actually two talks that are related to services this week. They kind of went out of order, so this one's going to focus on service template creation, and I'm going to mention briefly some SP1 features during the initial slides of this talk. But I'm giving another presentation on Thursday, which is MGT 317, which focuses on sort of the full service lifecycle management. So this session, we're going to walk through the creation of a couple of service templates to show you all the components firsthand, how you go ahead building both a very simple service as well as a, what some would consider a more complex service. But we're not going to go into other aspects of services like the service lifecycle management and how you upgrade services, how you scale them out, how you roll them back, and things like that. Those will all be covered in the Thursday session, and we'll go more into depth in the Thursday session on some additional SP1 features that I'm not going to touch on in this session. So some background info that will help me. How many people are familiar with VMM 2008 R2? And how many are familiar with VMM 2012? And how many are familiar with services in VMM 2012? Okay, so the hands went down progressively, so I am going to spend a little bit of time on the background of services. So in VMM 2008 R2, we had this notion of a VM template, a virtual machine template. What this allowed you to do was repeatedly and reliably deploy standalone virtual machines. And a VM template really at its heart consisted of three things. One was one or more virtual disks. The second one was what we called a hardware profile. So this is, just as it sounds, describes the hardware characteristics of the virtual machine that you want to spin up. How much memory is it going to get? How many processors? How many NICs are you going to have? Which networks are they connected to? And so forth. And the final thing we had was a guest OS profile, an operating system profile. And this was really specific to Windows devices. And what it allowed you to do was specialize Windows operating systems. So you would typically deploy from a sysprep VHD, and then the OS profile would allow you to specialize to configure the Windows specialization. Things like, what's the computer name going to be, and what's the local admin password going to be initially? Which domain do you want the machine joined to, and what are the credentials that you're going to use to join the domain? So really, this was a set of things that you generally do in an unattend file, and we made it easy by abstracting those out into a first-class UI. And for things that we didn't cover in that guest OS profile, you could always attach a custom unattend file. So if you needed to join a machine to a particular OU, and we didn't have that setting in our UI, you could attach a custom unattend file to do that, and we'd just go ahead and merge those settings in the unattend file with the settings in our guest OS profile. So VM templates in 2008 R2 were really good, as I mentioned, for repeatedly, reliably deploying standalone virtual machines, but they suffered at least three big constraints when we looked back on them as we were first doing our planning for VMM 2012, and we set out to create a new type of template called a service template to solve those three problems. Problem number one was, well, they were good for single virtual machines. And typically, when you're deploying a business service, maybe it's a two-tier, three-tier application, most of your business services, at least in production, don't run on a standalone machine, right, all in one install. Generally, you may have something like a front-end presentation tier, maybe a middle tier that's doing some business logic, and a data tier on the back end, so usually running SQL Server with some databases. So that was number one. We could only do one machine at a time with VM templates. Second big problem was, the extent to which we would allow you to do in-guest configuration was really limited to Windows OS specialization. So again, it was things like the local admin password, domain join. You could attach a GUI run once script to try to do something after the machine had been specialized, but that was really all you could do in terms of provisioning a VM and configuring it at provisioning time. So typically what you had to do was use some other tool or manually log into the machine afterwards and then install the applications you wanted or install and enable roles and features, right? And if you think about Windows Server 2008 R2, if you deployed a server with a base operating system and didn't enable any roles and features, it's nearly impossible for that machine to be doing anything useful. It can't even be a file server, right? Even that's a role that you have to enable within the operating system. So with services and service templates only, we enabled a far richer set of in-guest configuration features for you. So you can do things like enable Windows roles and features. You can do things like install applications during provisioning time. We have support for what we call three first-class application types. I'll tell you why they're first-class in a moment. But those types are MS Deploy packages for IIS-based applications, ServerAppV, which if you're familiar with ClientAppV, ServerAppV is a derivative of that technology, and it's more targeted at server workloads. And SQL data tier applications, so DAC packs for deploying databases to SQL servers. The reason I call those first class is that you can drop those package types into the VMM library, and the library is really a collection of building blocks for your virtual machines and services. Library will refresh in things like VHDs, VMware VMDKs, application packages of this type, scripts, and so forth. And when we refresh in these package types, we actually understand the metadata around them. So if you're familiar with WebDeploy, WebDeploy can have parameters that can be specialized by an end user. So we'll actually refresh those properties in on the package. Something very similar exists for ServerAppV. When you sequence an application with ServerAppV, it'll try to capture all the properties and settings of that application, and we'll actually expose those to you in the UI and give you facilities to allow the end user to override those at deployment time. So you could think about an application that has a web front end and a SQL back end, and you want to deploy that application into dev, QA, staging, and production, and perhaps the only thing that changes between those environments is the connection string. Well, you can use our service template to model that connection string as what we call a configurable service setting and allow the end user to specify that information at deployment time, which means you can take that single recipe of that service, deploy it into multiple environments, and have it specialized for each environment. And we'll remember those settings over the life cycle of that particular service. So the next question I usually get asked is, that's great, right? These are good application technologies, but what about applications that aren't leveraging these? What about MSIs? What about some script that I need to execute? For that, we built a feature called GCE, or generic command execution, and that allows you to execute arbitrary scripts inside the VM and deliver arbitrary payload to the VM, either at provisioning time or even later on in the lifecycle during an upgrade of that particular VM. So with that, you could actually use that functionality to pretty much install anything inside the VM that can be done in a silent and unattended fashion. So if you had an MSI you wanted to install, you could put that MSI into the VMM library in a folder that ends in .cr, and that stands for custom resource. And then you can point your script at that custom resource, and at deployment time or even update time, we'll inject the contents of that folder into the VM, and we'll execute the script you've told us to execute. And we give you a bunch of advanced control over how that script executes in terms of reboots and exit codes and so forth, and we'll drill into that once I switch over to my demo system. So in VMM 2012 RTM, we supported WebDeploy 2.0, ServerAppV RTM. ServerAppV actually ships as part of Virtual Machine Manager, and we supported the SQL DACFX framework 1.1. And in SP1, we're introducing support for, we'll maintain support for those, and we'll also introduce support for updated versions of those frameworks. So WebDeploy 3.0, which is in RC stage right now, SQL DACFX version 3, which I believe RTM'd with Denali, and with SQL 2012, and ServerAppV SP1 will ship as a part of Virtual Machine Manager SP1. So why would you use services? One is, again, it'll allow you to manage these multi-tier applications or these multi-VM distributed services as a unit. And what I mean by that is you can deploy them as a unit, you can upgrade them as a unit, you can stop and start them or delete them as a unit instead of managing a disparate set of virtual machines that really do have a relationship with one another. Another reason is we have a scale-out wizard that we introduced in 2012. So you can mark a particular tier of a service, perhaps your web tier, your front-end tier, as a scale-out tier, and you can have that scale-out based on demand, right, by using integration with Ops Manager, or it could be a manual activity. Again, we have a wizard, or you can do it through PowerShell. One other thing I'll mention is I'm happy to take questions as the presentation is going along, so I don't feel the need to hold them to the end. And finally, and one of the biggest features really of services, is this composability aspect that you get between operating system and applications. So if you think about in the past, we talked to lots of customers who maintained just a plethora of sysprepped images. So they would have a sysprepped image for an IIS server, a sysprepped image for a file server, a sysprepped image for a standard BizTalk server, a sysprepped image for an app server. Number one, that's a lot of images to maintain and to have storage for. Number two, the maintenance of those images is really problematic over time, because when you have to make changes to a particular image, you have to rehydrate the image, make your changes, re-sysprep it again, and then make sure that people are A, using the right image, and then B, what do you do about all the devices that were deployed from the older image, right? You have to find a way to go ahead and update those. But you could imagine by leveraging service templates, services in VMM, you could have, for example, a base Server 2008 R2 operating system image, which has no roles and features configured within it, which has no configuration done. It's just the base OS that's been sysprepped. And you can define all the customizations you need for a particular type of workload, such as an IIS server, an application server, a BizTalk server, a SQL server, for example. And those are just stored in our database as metadata, so they consume very little space, and you can use one base operating system image and use a VMM service template to customize that one image into a multitude of different types of workloads. So the starting point for services is always to create your service template. And one other thing that I failed to mention earlier with VM templates in VMM 2008 R2 is the third problem we had with these was when you deployed an instance from a VM template, it maintained no relationship back to the template from which it was provisioned. So over time, there was no easy way to update images. So if you had, for example, an IIS VM template and you deployed 70 instances of it out there, and then you had to make a change, you couldn't really orchestrate that change across all those deployed instances because you didn't even know which virtual machines were deployed from that particular template. With services, whenever you deploy an instance from a service template, we do maintain a reference and a relationship back to the service template and the version of that service template from which those machines were provisioned. So you can imagine if you had a standard service template for an IIS server and you enabled, say, the default set of roles and features for web server parentheses IIS in our guest OS profile, and folks went out there and leveraged that template and deployed 80 different web servers, right, that were out in the environment. And it turns out that you didn't enable the IIS 6 management compatibility feature, and nearly everyone actually needs that feature on their web server. In the past, what you would have done is either go and touch 80 machines manually and enable that feature, maybe try to find a way to script it across all the VMs, but again, you'd have a problem figuring out which ones were deployed from that template, or you could tell people, well, you're an admin on the machine, just go ahead and enable what you need. With a service template, what you could do is you could take that original template, copy it, add the IIS 6 management compatibility feature, and then go and apply that updated template to all 80 instances that are out there in the environment, and you could tell us to either apply the changes immediately or defer them to some scheduled maintenance window. And when you tell us to apply that template, what we're going to do is diff the two templates, figure out the changes, and then just apply the changes to those running instances. So when you go ahead and create your service template again, it's always the starting point. We introduced a new service designer in VMM, and that's where we'll spend the bulk of this session in once I switch over. And that allows you to define even multiple types of machines in a single template. So you could define a web tier that has a specific hardware, OS configuration, a particular set of applications and scripts, a middle tier that has a different hardware configuration, different OS characteristics, and a different set of applications and scripts, and finally a data tier in which you want to provision SQL Server. It has yet a third type of hardware configuration and other different OS specialization aspects. And you'll define the connectivity of tiers. You can wire them up to load balancers. VMM 2012 introduced support for integration with load balancers such as Microsoft NOB, BigIP F5s, and Citrix NetScalers so that you can mark a tier in a service as behind a load balancer. And we'll take care of actually creating the VIP on the load balancer, putting the members in, configuring the properties on that particular load balancer based on what you've said your application requires, like persistence or non-persistence, and what's the load balancing algorithm, and so forth. I mentioned just a minute ago that deployed services are always linked to their templates. So once you've deployed an instance from a particular service template version, that service template becomes read-only, because we don't want you making modifications to it while there are deployed instances. The way to make changes, again, is to copy that template, make your changes in the copy, and then apply the updated, right, the newer version of the template to one or more instances. And you can go back and forth. You don't always have to move forward. You could do a deployment to a new version of a service template, and it didn't work. You can easily just roll back to the previous version. And Thursday's session will cover lifecycle management in depth. And typically, when you're designing your service, it's important to note that actual fabric information, like the exact host that service may be running on, or the exact set of hosts that service is running on, or the exact load balancer that that service or service will be wired up to, is usually not available when you're designing. So what you're doing is you're describing the requirements of that service, the requirements of each of the tiers, and then at deployment time, when you choose either a host group or a private cloud to deploy that service, our placement engine will go through and figure out all the requirements of that service and make sure that it can be placed appropriately. And if it can't be placed into a particular host group or a particular cloud because that host group or cloud can't satisfy the requirements of at least one of the VMs in that service, placement will give you a sensible error message to figure out what went wrong and which requirement you're actually missing in the environment to which you're trying to deploy. So I'm going to briefly walk through each of the building blocks of a service template, and after I'm done with these, we'll switch over and we'll spend the rest of the session really in my VMM system designing a couple service templates from the ground up. So the first building block are what we call custom resources. And again, these are folders that you create in a VMM library, and they just end in a .cr extension. And VMM will refresh the fact that there is a folder that's a custom resource in the library, but we won't actually refresh in all the individual files that happen to be in that folder. So you may have a folder that has four MSIs, a couple of VB scripts, and a CMD file that's going to go ahead and install those four MSIs and execute those two VB scripts. We won't refresh the individual files in. but we will make that folder available for you to deliver to the VM as payload, and you can tell us which script you want to execute within that folder and give us a bunch of parameters around that. So that's where you use custom resources. We include some custom resources by default with a VMM install, and these are for the application frameworks that we support. So if you're going to deploy web deploy applications, it means that you need to get the web deploy framework deployed out to those VMs as well. So we include some custom resources for web deploy, along with some sample install scripts that you can leverage out of the box. Same thing for Server App V. We include custom resources for the Server App V framework, along with install scripts for the Server App V sequencer, the Server App V agent, and all the Server App V PowerShell commandlets. Next one is generic command execution. I spoke about this. This is used generally in conjunction with custom resources, and this is when you want to deliver payload and execute arbitrary scripts within a VM, either during provisioning or during servicing of that VM going forward. You can specify things like the run as account for the script. So by default, we'll run that script that you tell us to run under local system, but if you want, you can tell us to run it underneath a different account that you create in VMM. So it could be perhaps a domain account, because maybe that script needs access to some network resources, or it could be a local user account that you know exists on that particular virtual machine. Script parameters can also be specified by the end user at deployment time. So you can write your script in such a way that you can elicit end user feedback that will be piped into those scripts as parameters. We'll cover that again when we get to the demos. And in SP1, scripts can be marked as idempotent. What that means is, in VMM 2012, when we execute a script via generic command execution, it's really like a black box to us, right? We're running what you told us to run, but we don't know the internals of the script because we don't parse it and we don't have knowledge of, well, the script performed these 18 steps. So if you ever deployed a service with VMM and one of your generic command execution scripts failed, you can restart the VMM job, but we'll always skip the last GCE that failed because it failed, and we don't know if we should run it again. In SP1, we introduced a new checkbox for scripts, or a new dropdown, actually, that tells us what should we do if that script fails and you restart the VMM job. And the options for you are maintain the VMM 2012 behavior, where I want you to skip that script and just move on to the next step in creating the service, or if you've marked it as idempotent, we'll actually rerun the script. So maybe you had a network connectivity failure during the time of script execution, and you want to restart that VMM job, and you want us to restart that script, in SP1, we've given you facilities to do that. There's multiple entry points at which you can execute a particular script. So you can execute a script before any application has been installed or after any application has been installed. You can execute scripts before servicing a service when you're doing an upgrade or after servicing. You can also execute scripts before a particular application is installed. So if I'm deploying 3 web deploy applications in the context of a service tier, I can execute a pre-install script before each of them if I want to. Again, these are completely optional, but we've given you a lot of different entry points. One of the limitations we had in 2012 RTM, however, was we only let you run one script of each type. So if you had to actually execute 4 different scripts in a pre-install phase for a particular service, what we made you do was write sort of one master script that would then call each of your 4 subscripts, which meant that you were responsible for controlling things like exit codes and reboots between those scripts and what happens if one of them fails but the next one doesn't. So in SP1, what we've introduced is support for multiple pre- and post-install and multiple pre- and post-uninstall GCEs. So not on an application basis, but before and after any application's been installed, you can tell us to execute multiple ordered GCEs, and you can then have individual control over the reboot and exit code behavior for each of those scripts. SQL profiles. You might be aware, you might not, but SQL 2008 R2 introduced an ability to create a prepared instance of SQL. And the way you did this was you went through the SQL installation wizard, and there was an advanced option to create a prepared instance of SQL. What this would do is it would walk you through a mini setup wizard, and it would allow you to essentially create a sysprepped instance of SQL that was not ready to go, but could be specialized later on. So in 2012 RTM, we introduced a new profile type called a SQL profile in VMM, and that allows us to take a prepared instance of SQL and then specialize it per your requirements. So you can tell us things like, well, I want the SQL server to be running in mixed mode or Windows off mode, and if it's running in mixed mode, this is what I want the SA password to be. And I want TCP/IP and or named pipes enabled, and these are the service account identities for each of the core SQL Server services. And at provisioning time for that particular virtual machine, we'd go ahead and specialize SQL and complete that prepared instance so that when the VM was done provisioned, you actually had a fully functioning SQL Server ready to go. In VMM 2012 RTM, We have support for doing that for SQL 2008 R2, and in SP1, we'll introduce support for SQL 2012 as well, while maintaining our support for SQL 2008 R2. It does require a SysPrep SQL instance, so you can't just take some arbitrary VHD and turn it into a SQL server. You have to have a VHD which has a prepared instance of SQL. And I mentioned most of the things that we allow you to specialize for SQL Server during that provisioning, which are, again, instance name, security mode. And similar to the unattend functionality, we'll allow you to attach a custom SQL configuration INI. So if there are things you want to specialize about that SQL Server that we haven't exposed in our UI, you can attach a custom SQL Server configuration INI. And just like the unattend case, we'll merge those settings with the settings that you specified in our SQL profile so that you have that SQL Server configured just right according to your specifications and your requirements. What we heard from customers when we talked about SQL application, SQL database deployment was, you know, this is great, and I might use this in my dev test environments where I'm giving people these standalone SQL servers, but usually in my QA staging and production environments, each application doesn't actually get its own SQL server, right? Generally, I'll have a big, beefy SQL cluster that's hosting databases for tens, if not hundreds, of applications. So in VMM 2012, we also included an object type called an application host. And this allows you to take SQL data tier applications, so DAC packs, databases, as well as execute T-SQL scripts against an arbitrary SQL server in the environment, whether that SQL server is physical, virtual, clustered, managed by Virtual Machine Manager or not. The restrictions are, because we're not going to put an agent on that SQL device, because we don't assume that we're managing it, you can only use this to deploy SQL databases and execute T-SQL scripts. You can't run a generic command against it because we don't have an agent on that SQL server. But this does allow you to model a service such that your databases are actually being deployed to some existing SQL server in the environment, not spinning up a virtual machine for that SQL instance. As I mentioned, in VMM 2012 RTM, we had one type of application host, and that was for SQL Server. In 2012 SP1, we'll introduce support for a new type of application host that we call a web application host or a web server application host. And this will allow you to take Microsoft Web Deploy packages and deploy them to an existing IIS server or an existing IIS farm that happens to be in the environment. So in Thursday's session, I'll actually show you a service template that doesn't spin up any virtual machines. It actually takes a Web Deploy package, a SQL database, and some T-SQL scripts and deploys it to existing servers that happen to be in the environment. One is an IIS farm, one is a standalone SQL server that's already been provisioned. But I can still manage the lifecycle of that service. I can still upgrade my web deploy package, upgrade my DAC packs, add additional web deploy applications or DAC applications over time. And finally, the target server name can be what we call a configurable service setting so that you don't have to bake the SQL server name or the web server name into the template. You can ask the end user at deployment time, which SQL server do you want to deploy this to, or which IIS server do you want to deploy this to? Again, this allows you the flexibility to create one service template and deploy it into multiple environments by asking the end user for that important specialization information at deployment time. And finally, configurable service settings. We allow you to use these in multiple places throughout our model, and they're all imperative in the sense that in the template itself, in fields within the template, you'll tell us, I want this to be a configurable service setting. And the way you do that is you give us a variable name that's encapsulated by the at symbol. So if I wanted to ask the end user for the SQL server name at deployment time, I could give them a friendly variable name like at SQL space server at. And then at deployment time, they're going to get asked for the value of that. And for each configurable service setting, you can mark them in one of three ways. You can make them mandatory or optional. So do you require that the user provide a value for this before deployment or not? Two, you can mark them as encrypted or not, so maybe a password field, for example. You want to not only mask in the UI, but you want us to store and transmit that securely. And finally, you can provide a default value for a service setting. So maybe you have a timeout setting for a web application, and that can vary between dev, QA, staging, and production, between, say, 120 seconds all the way up to 360 seconds. You could provide a sensible default value of, say, 240 and allow people to override that at deployment time. And we include a few predefined service settings that we won't ask the end user for, but you can still use as parameters to scripts, parameters for web deploy packages and server app V packages. And one of the most useful ones is the at computer name at predefined service setting. What this means is if you had a script and that script required the host name of the machine it was running on, then you could pass that in as a parameter using this at computer name at nomenclature. We won't ask the end user for that value because we'll know that value since we're the ones provisioning the machine. So service template components, if we think back about VMM 2008 R2, We had a VM template, and as I mentioned earlier, consisted really of three different things: a VHD, one or more, a hardware profile, and a guest OS profile. So in VMM 2012 RTM, we introduced a computer tier template. And really all this is a VM template, but it allows you to have multiple tiers in a single service template. So the computer tier template is housed by the overall service template. And we extended VM profiles with some additional profile types. So the first one is an application profile. And this is where you can model things like which applications do you want to deploy inside of a VM. And it doesn't have to be of a single type. You could have an application profile that installs 3 web deploy packages, 4 DAC packs, and 2 server app V packages, and executes a number of scripts. Or you could segregate them such that one is just used for this web deploy package and so forth. So an application profile can contain one or more application deployments. So one application, one script, or 6 applications and 4 scripts, for example. And then the optional extensibility points for executing your own scripts, pre and post install. And then for the guest OS profile, we extended it where that's where you make your role and feature selections for Windows Server 2008 R2 and above. This is where you tell us, I want this role or these roles and these features enabled. The SQL profile I mentioned, this is for completing a prepared instance of SQL. And that SQL profile can contain one or more SQL deployments. So if you want to create a SQL server that winds up having 3 or 4 instances of SQL within it, you can certainly use a SQL profile to do that. And then we have a load balancer template. And again, this is for marking tiers whose VMs should be behind a load balancer with which we support integration. And then we have that application host profile, again, for use in deploying in 2012 RTM SQL databases out to an existing SQL server. And in 2012 SP1, the additional support for web deploy applications to deploy to an arbitrary IIS server in the environment. And finally, all the configurable service settings that you define in the model show up as properties of the service template itself. So now we'll switch over into my demo system, and we're going to create a couple different service templates. Are there any questions so far? Yes. So the question was, how does this fit in with Config Manager and its OS deployment features and probably even its application deployment features for client OSs? The way we think about Config Manager going forward really is that it's a great client solution, right? So if you're deploying things like Adobe Acrobat, if you're deploying some MSIs that are going to a number of desktop workstations, Config Manager is certainly the way to go. Our application deployment support is really targeted at server workloads. So that's where we support deploying applications, load balancer integration, things like that. So when you think about Config Manager and Virtual Machine Manager's capabilities, really think about Virtual Machine Manager as your server-based solution for not only deploying virtual machines, and the virtual machines could be client or server, but when you're thinking about application deployment features of VMM, it's really for server workloads. And that's why even if you think about AppV, right, there's a client AppV product, which is great for desktop workloads, and then Server AppV was written as a derivative of that, which targets server-based workloads. So this is the overall VMM UI, and I have no VM templates. And one of the things that I hear from time to time is that service templates can appear very complex. Part of that, I think, is our fault, Microsoft's fault, maybe my fault in particular, because a lot of the sample templates that we've shipped throughout beta and the RC timeframe were complex service templates of 3-tier applications and 4-tier applications. So the first thing I want to show you is just creating a couple standard VM templates for, say, an IIS server and a SQL server, and then showing you how easy it is to wrap those into a service template for deployment. So I'm going to go through my normal VM template creation wizard, and I'm going to create a VM template that's going to define what a standard IIS server looks like in my environment. So I'm going to choose an existing virtual hard disk, and the one I'm going to select is just a Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 disk that I have in my VMM library. I'm going to give the template a name, so we'll call it Standard IIS Server. And then I get to configure the hardware. So my IIS servers are pretty lightweight. I don't need a ton of hardware for them, so I'm going to give each of them just a gig of memory, and I'll just set it as static to make things easy for now. And I'm also going to go ahead and give it a regular network adapter, not a legacy one, and say that it's going to be connected to my corporate logical network, right, that's already available within VMM. So that's what a hardware profile looks like in VMM 2012. It's identical, pretty much, to the one that was available in 2008 R2. Next, we're going to get to the OS profile, where I'm going to decide things about how I want to specialize the operating system for this particular type of VM that's going to get provisioned in the environment. I'm also going to minimize my bar here, so we'll just give that a second. What I'm showing you here is actually a SP1 build, so we're pretty early on. If I hit any bugs, I apologize. I don't expect to, but this one is taking a little bit of time here. I actually want to see if I'm still connected to my VM, which I am. So we'll give this just a second to come back. So now on the OS profile, again, it's pretty much identical to the VMM 2008 R2 OS profile with two big exceptions. And the big exceptions are the roles and features that I want to be able to specialize or I want to be able to enable as part of this particular template. So we also support computer naming patterns. So if you're using services, it's a good idea to use patterns so you can take advantage of scale out. So in this case, I'm just going to call mine SBIIS pound, pound, pound. What that means is VMM will generate computer names based on this pattern. So the first machine that gets deployed from this will have SBIIS 001 and 002. And we'll keep track of the names that are actually out there that have been provisioned by VMM. We will not, however, try to rationalize those names with existing machines that may be in the environment that are not managed by VMM. So if you've deployed a machine outside of VMM that has the name SBIIS 001, we're not going to validate that. We'll only validate names that we've given and names that we've reclaimed via VM deletion. The local admin password, I'll just specify one in the template. I could also use a run as account for this if I wanted to. I can specify product key if I need to, time zone. I'm not going to do any of that. The operating system is important because the operating system tells us if we support application deployment features or not. So we don't support them to client OSs. So if I went and told the guest OS profile that this is going to be, say, even Windows 2000 server, then my role and feature is going to be unavailable. And it's going to tell me, sorry, this is only supported on server 2008 R2 and above. Or if it was a client OS, we'd do the same thing. So we try to protect you from trying to configure things that we know are going to fail. But I'll go back to my operating system, and I'll say that this is going to be a server 2008 R2 standard. And now you'll see that I have the opportunity to specify roles and features. So I'm going to make this one simple, and I'm just going to go ahead and enable the web server IIS role. By default, we'll include all the prerequisites and all the default role services and features that are children of that particular role. And I'm also going to go ahead and enable the .NET 351 feature set for these particular VMs. And finally, I'll specify that I want this machine domain joined. And I can specify credentials. And instead of hard coding these credentials in the template, I'll use a run as account that I created earlier in VMM that is an account that has rights to join machines to the domain. And I don't necessarily need to know those credentials, but I've been granted access to use that run as account. So my personal account may not have access to join the machine to the domain, but this run as account does, and I don't have to know the credentials. My admin's granted me access to that account. Next is where I can configure applications. Now this one, I just want this template to be for a standard IIS server, right? It's just roles and features, so I'm not going to install any applications. And this tab is where I could configure SQL Server if I had a prepared instance of SQL. Again, I want this to be a generic IIS web server template, so I'm not going to configure SQL. So I'll click Next and Create, and then we're going to go ahead and create this template, and now it'll be available for me to either use myself or share with other people so that they could leverage this template as well. Once that finishes creating, I'll go back and I'll create a second template, and that one will do some SQL Server configuration within. So I'm going to walk through the same wizard again, and I'm going to create a second template. But this time, I'm not going to choose that same VHD. I actually have a VHD that has a prepared instance of SQL in it, so I'm going to choose that VHD to go ahead and use. Because again, to complete the installation of SQL, we do require that you already have a prepared instance of SQL in that sysprepped image. So I've gone ahead and selected that SQL disk. Next, I'm going to give this one a different template name. So this is just going to be standard SQL Server. And my SQL servers require a little bit more hardware than my typical web server. So I'm going to give this one, say, 4 gigs of memory. And I'm going to give it two processors, for example. And I'm going to do the same thing with my NIC. I'm going to remove the default legacy adapter. And I'm going to go ahead and add a regular synthetic network adapter. And I'll connect it to the same logical network of CORP. After this comes through again, we noticed a delay last time, but now that delay appears to be gone, which is good. I'm going to give these machines a different naming pattern. So the other ones I called SBIIS pound, pound, pound. I'll call these SB SQL pound, pound, pound. So now any machine provision from this is going to have a computer name of SB SQL 001, for example, and so forth. So I can differentiate those in my environment. I'll go ahead and also give this one an admin password. And again, I'll just put it right into the template, although I could also have a run as account to use for that. And my SQL servers don't require any role and feature, so I'm not going to enable anything there. But I am going to have them join the same domain. Maybe it's my just standard corporate domain. And I'll use the same run as account that I used before. And again, this could be something completely different, or I could hard code it into the template. And for this one, I always want RDP enabled, and we don't expose that as a first class property here. So I crafted an unattend file on my own that actually enables RDP on machines during provisioning and also adds my account to the local admin group. So I'll attach a custom unattend file here. And I'm asked if I want us to go through that answer file and repopulate settings that are already here. I don't want it to do that. I just want it to take the new settings and merge everything at deployment time. So I'll say no. And now I have a custom unattend file that's also going to be used at deployment time for this machine. This is going to be a generic SQL server, if I can type my password in correctly. So again, I'm not going to install any applications by default for machines from this template, but I am going to go ahead and configure SQL Server in this template. And the way I do that is I add a new SQL Server deployment, and then I'm asked for some information about how we want to specialize that SQL Server. So the first thing I'm asked for is, what do I want the instance name to be after SQL's been specialized? We'll use the default if you don't give us any, but I'll put the default in here explicitly, which is MS SQL Server. And then we're asked for the instance ID that was sysprepped. So when you go through that mini SQL installation wizard to create a prepared instance of SQL, you give the prepared instance a special ID. It can be anything you want. I know that I've called mine sysprep SQL, so I'm going to put that in here. I'm not going to provide a product key because this is an eval version of SQL that I'm deploying, and I can specify which account do I want to run the installation of SQL Server. So I could leave it at the default of local system, and that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to have the local system account on that machine execute the completion of that SQL install. Then on the configuration tab, I can specify a few things. One is, in order for SQL Server to complete its prepared install, it needs the location of the SQL install media. Now, you could either sysprep that into your VHD, or you could leave it on a network share somewhere. The key thing to note is, if it's on a network share somewhere, you're going to have to make sure that that installation account that was specified here is a domain account that has access to that share, because that account is going to reach out and try to find the SQL install media. Mine's baked in, so I've chosen system, because I know it's going to have access to everything on that VHD. And I know that I put the SQL install media in a directory called c:\sql-eval on that VHD. I can also add the initial set of SQL Server admins. So I'll go ahead and add my own account there. And then I can choose the security mode that I want SQL to run in. I want it to run in mixed mode. And since I want it to run in mixed mode, I also have to give it the initial SA password. And I have a run as account I created that has a username of SA and the appropriate password that I want. So that's how I'll specify the SA password. And I want my SQL Server to have TCP/IP enabled by default. And finally, I can specify the identity for the core SQL Server services, the server service agent, and optionally the reporting services account, if I've sysprep reporting services into that image of SQL. So I'm just going to have them run under local system. And I know that I haven't sysprep reporting services here, so I'm not even going to fill that one out. And I'll click Next, and then I'll create this template. So what I've done, pretty easily, just a couple minutes, I've created two standard VM templates, one that's going to deploy an IIS server, and one that's going to deploy and specialize a SQL server. Now, if I tried to deploy a VM from these particular templates, a normal VM, right, not a service VM, I'm going to be told that features that I've selected here are not supported. And this will happen near the end of the wizard. Things like role feature, application deployment, SQL Server specialization, if you deploy a standard VM template, those things will not be executed. Those are only valid in the context of a service template. So since I know that, instead of trying to deploy from here, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to create a new service template for each of these. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a service template that uses both of these. So maybe I want to provide a standard development environment to my developers that consists of a web server and a SQL server so that they can easily provision a two-machine development environment where IIS and SQL are already installed and ready to go for them based on my specifications. So I'll go ahead and create a new service template. And I'm just going to call this service template Web SQL Development, and I'll give it a release or a version of 1.0. And I'm going to start blank, but I could choose to start with some patterns that we provide, like single machine, two-tier, or even three-tier application. I'm just going to make mine blank to show you how easy it is, now that you've created those VM templates, to put them into a service template. At its most basic, all I really have to do is drag the existing VM templates that I want in here. So I have my IIS server, and I have my SQL server. And really, that's it. I'm done. If I wanted people to be able to deploy this, all I have to do is hit save. Or if I wanted to deploy it myself, I would just hit the configure deployment button. So a service template, again, can be very simple. I could have just made a service template for the IIS server. But now I've authored these two templates, and I've given people the ability to go ahead and specialize and go ahead and create instances of that service where when that's provisioned, they have access to fully functioning IIS and SQL server that's ready to go for them. So that's one service template that doesn't use any applications whatsoever. What I'm going to do is I'm going to copy this service template, and I'm going to give it a new name, and we're going to add some applications to show you how easy it is to also do those, and we'll also drill into some other components like custom resources, application packages, and configurable service settings. So once this saves, I'll go ahead and do that. In the meantime, are there any questions up to this point? Yes. The question was, when will SP1 be available? So we have CTP1 that's out now. CTP2 should be announced and available very shortly. All the new services-related features will come online in beta, and we don't really have a date that we're disclosing for that yet, but it will be sometime before the end of this year, beta for sure. And then RTM, I believe, will also probably be, and again, this is not an official statement, probably by the end of this calendar year, I would expect that SP1 for System Center will be done. But again, CTP1 is out now, CTP2 out very shortly, and all the new services features will come online with the beta release. So I've saved this service template, and what I'm going to go ahead and do, and I called this Web SQL Development, I'm going to go ahead and copy this template, and we give you an easy way to just right-click and copy a template. And by default, we'll give it the same name and a new release of copy of the existing release. But I'm going to open this up in the designer, and I'm going to modify this template now so that it will deploy a Blog Engine application for me, which is a web deployer or server app V package and a database as well. So the first thing I'm going to do is give the service template a new name, because this is no longer just going to be a web and SQL development environment. This is going to actually be a Blog Engine. I'll just call it development environment. And I'll modify the version so that it's just the friendly 1.0. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go into my IIS tier of this application, and I'll take this opportunity to show you properties of tiers. So for any particular tier in a service template, you can mark that tier as either subject to scale out or not subject to scale out. So my SQL tier, I'm probably not going to scale out, but my front end tier, my web tier, I may allow to be scaled out. And in that case, I can decide, well, what's the default instance count? And what that means is, whenever someone deploys an instance of this service, I want this tier to start with 1, 2, 3, 4 VMs by default. And then I can specify maximum and minimum counts as well. So I can say that by default, I actually want 2 instances in this tier, and I want to allow it to grow up to a maximum of 4, and I never want it below 2 instances. Or I could say I want 3 by default, and I never want it below 2 and greater than 4. And then we have what are called upgrade domains. I'll mention them real briefly here, but we'll talk about these a little more in depth on Thursday. When I'm doing updates to a service, if I have multiple instances in a tier, I can specify that I want X number of upgrade domains. What that means to us is don't upgrade all the machines in that domain, in that tier, at one time. So if I had 4 instances running, and I had specified an upgrade domain count of 2, what we would do is take 2 instances out of the load balancer, upgrade them, put them back in, and then move on to the next 2. So that in theory, you could upgrade your service without suffering any end user downtime by leveraging upgrade domains. I can also specify application deployment orders. So maybe I know that I need my SQL database available before I can actually install my web application. So I could say that the SQL tier is application deployment order 1, and the web tier is application deployment order 2. Now, to be clear, we'll actually spin up all the VMs and specialize the operating system in parallel. So it's not like I'm going to wait for the entire SQL server to be done before I actually move on to the web tier. If I specified these application deployment orders, we would spin up all three virtual machines, one for the SQL tier and two for the web tier, where I've said I want a default count of 2. We'd spin them all up in parallel. We'd specialize the operating system in parallel. Then we would stagger the application deployment, so the role feature install, the applications, the scripts that are being executed. That's when we would start honoring the application deployment order that's been specified. So for my web tier, I'm going to go into the properties. And the first thing you'll note is that we've made a copy of this VM template. So if I went back and modified the original virtual machine template that I dragged in here, those modifications wouldn't be reflected in my service template, because I want people to use that as a basis, right, a building block of the service template. But ideally, they're going to go ahead and configure it and add things to it. So I have all the existing things that were in that VM template, like the identity information, the roles and features I selected. But now I'm going to go ahead and add some applications. So I'm going to say that I want to create new application settings. If I had previously defined an application profile in the system, I could just use that and copy it in, but I want to show you how to do it from scratch. So I'll create new application settings. And the first thing I'm going to do is, you'll notice that we have those three first-class applications, and then we have two script entries. And one of them is application script, which is not available right now, and one of them is script. The difference between these are when the scripts get executed. The one that's currently available to me is to execute either before or after any application has been installed. The application script is used in conjunction with a particular application package to execute immediately before or immediately after that application has been installed. So I know that I'm going to deploy a server app V application onto this virtual machine that I've used to sequence up my Blog Engine app. So knowing that I'm going to deploy server app V package, I know that I need the server app V agent on that machine. So the first thing I'm going to do is browse for a resource package. And this shows me all the custom resources that happen to be in my VMM library. So if I look at the one I'm going to use, it's this server app V x64 one. And what I'll do is pull that up in Windows Explorer so you can see what a custom resource looks like. So this one is just in my default VMM library share. And what we do in the default VMM library share, and when you're adding a library share, we give you an option to add default resources. What that means is you want us to copy all of the default custom resources that we include for web deploy and server app V into that library share. And we create them under a folder called application frameworks, and we make one for each type of framework, so web deploy and server app V, and one for each architecture of those frameworks, x86 and x64. So I know I'm deploying to a 64-bit machine. And if I look inside that custom resource, you can see there's a number of files in there. So the files that are there are the PowerShell commandlet setup executable for server app V, the server app V agent setup executable, the server app V sequencer, and the server app V sequencer commandlets. And we've included by default, VMM has, two CMD files, one for installing the app V agent and one for installing the sequencer. So if I look at the contents of the CMD file, even though my right click isn't working, there we go. The install salve CMD hopefully I didn't lose connectivity to my machine. Just a little slowness getting to the machine here, so we'll start over. Just going to wait for it to catch up. Looks like I might have double-clicked, which I didn't mean to do. So just looks like a little network slowness here. So let me just check my connectivity. Okay. And we'll wait for that to come back. In the meantime, any questions? Yes, sorry. Right. No. So the question was, when you're using naming patterns for computer names, is there a way to mark that pattern as, once I've deployed a machine with a name generated from this pattern, I never want to use it again? The answer is no. There's no built-in way to do that. So if you wind up deleting that VM, we're going to try to reuse that name again when we can, one that's been generated previously. Looks like the internet access on this machine is not there. What I'm going to try to do is set up my laptop and see if that has access. Okay, yeah, I'll just forcefully reconnect. Okay, maybe just temporary. So if I look at that install sav CMD again, what I wanted to point out to you was it takes a number of parameters, like slash W, to automatically install the web deploy framework as well. The reason that's there is if you use server at B to sequence up an IIS-based application, it actually requires web deploy to do that. The next question usually is, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just use the web deploy package? Well, server at B has facilities to automatically capture state that's associated with an application, so it'll really make your application portable. The other thing is, web deploy is great for packaging up IIS-based applications that consist strictly of IIS components, but maybe your IIS-based application also has a couple Windows services. Maybe it has a number of registry settings, some file permissions, and so forth. Server at B will actually capture things like Windows services, IIS settings, registry settings, and so forth. So it can capture a lot of additional properties, additional file types, and additional subsystem types that web deploy can't. So again, in that custom resource directory, I have a number of CMD files and a number of executables. So if I go back to my service template designer, what I actually want to do is use this script resource package, and I want to execute CMD, and the parameters I want are, the parameters I want to execute it with are slash Q slash C, because I want it to run quietly and suppress output, and I want to execute that install sav CMD that I just showed you in that custom resource directory. And by default, again, we'll run it as local system. I'm just going to explicitly specify that, and I can give it a timeout, and I'll say that this shouldn't take more than 15 minutes to run. And then in the advanced options, I can specify a number of things, like one, where do I want the working folder to take place? And in this case, I'll leave that at default. And if I want to write any of the standard output or standard error that comes back from executing that script, I can write that somewhere inside the guest so that if something fails, I have a record of what actually happened and I can go and troubleshoot. So in this case, I'll just write them to the root of the C drive into text files. And then I can say, well, do I want to match anything that comes back in standard out or standard error? And if I do, what do I want to do with it? Do I want to actually fail the job, or do I just want to warn that something matched here and continue on with what's going on? And then I can specify restart behavior, such as, do I want to always restart the machine after the script is finished, or do I want to restart it if I match a particular exit code? We include some sensible default ones, but I could put my own in there. And if it's restarted, do I want it to restart the script after hitting this exit code? I'll leave those at the default. And the next thing I want to do is, so now I've generated a pre-install script to go ahead and install the server at B agent for me. The next thing I want to do is add my server at B package. So I'm going to give it a sensible name here, and I'm just going to call it Blog Engine. And then I can browse, and what it's going to show me is all the server at B packages that are in my VMM library. I'm going to choose the 3.0 one because I know that's the one that I sequenced that works with SQL Server. And I mentioned earlier about our support for first-class application types, and this is what I meant. Server at B has captured all these properties about my application, and VMM has now exposed them to me. So if I want someone to specify the connection string at deployment time, what I can do is come in here, and if you look, this is the Blog Engine connection string property that was detected by server at V, and I want someone to give me the SQL server that they're going to use at deployment time, and I want them to give me the SQL user and password at deployment time, because that can change based on the environment in which people are going to deploy this. So what I would do is I would replace this default of MySQL server with, again, a configurable service setting. And remember, those are prepended and appended with the at symbol. And I'll just say, I want them to give me a value for the setting SQL server. And at deployment time, we'll substitute the value they've given us into this portion of the server at v package, effectively replacing entries in the webconfig file in this case. And for the user ID, I want to tell them that what I want from them in this case is the SQL user. And for the password, I'm going to tell them that what I want in this case is the SQL password. Now remember these variables, because we're going to use them another place in the model. And the nice thing about that is I can ask the user for the SQL server name or the SQL user one time, and I can use it in different GCEs across my service template model. So I've added my server app v package, and I've added my server app v agent into this tier of the service template. So I'm going to go ahead and click OK there. And we'll warn you that, hey, the guest OS profile for this tier is this, the bolded one, but you haven't said that this application profile is compatible with that. So I'll go ahead and check that. I could also make it compatible with multiple operating systems if I wanted to. And after that, we'll move on to the SQL tier, and we'll go ahead and add a database and a T-SQL script, and then we'll walk through the configure deployment wizard so you can see how these types of settings get exposed to the end user at deployment time. The other thing I have is another pre-existing service template that I'll show you with time pending. So once this closes out, again, this is an SP1 build, so we expect a little bit of slowness here and there. Any other questions while we're waiting for this tier to save? Yes. So the question was, can you get the variables from PowerShell scripts? You can set up the variables, the configurable service settings, in such a way that you can pass them in as parameters to a PowerShell script. And I can show you a sample of that that I use to configure a web farm by calling web farm framework PowerShell. Another question? So the question was, if the web deploy package has certain prerequisites and certain dependencies, will they automatically get installed? Is there a way to automatically install them? I think you're thinking about like a WebPI functionality that may have a feed that says it needs all these things. We don't have that. It's something we're actually looking at going forward, is could we support something, whether it is WebPI natively or something like that, where you could chain dependencies. So not in 2012 RTM and not in SP1. You could certainly use a generic command, a generic script, to try to install a WebPI application. And in that case, you would get all the dependencies, but that would be WebPI giving you that functionality. Nothing baked into VMM for that. So in my data tier, I have, again, no applications by default. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new application setting here. And I'm going to add a SQL data tier application. And I'm going to call this one my Blog Engine Database. And I'm going to browse for packages. And again, I only get presented with DAC packs here. And I have a Blog Engine database that I created. And I can specify things like, well, what do I want that instance name to be once it's actually been deployed to SQL Server? I'll leave it at the default. And then I can say, what account is going to be used to deploy this database inside that VM? And I'm going to say, well, the SQL Server itself I know is using mixed mode because I specified that in my SQL config. And the run as account I'm going to use is this SQL admin credential that I have to deploy it. And then I can specify uninstall behavior. So if I update this service template later and remove this particular database from the model, how should I treat uninstall on the SQL server? Should I detach the database and leave the physical file around? Should I just unregister it from the DAC framework? Or should I drop it and actually delete the physical file as well? I know if I delete the database, I'm not going to want the physical file around, so I'm going to choose to drop database in the event of uninstall. And in the advanced section, I can specify things that are specific to DACFX. So when I upgrade this database, should I ignore any changes that were made maybe out of band, directly to the database? Or if I upgrade this database and it turns out that my new version of the database removed a particular column, should I ignore any data loss that may occur as part of upgrading that database? I'll just leave these at the default settings. And then I'm going to add a T-SQL script. And what this T-SQL script is going to do is it's going to actually create the SQL username and the SQL with the SQL password that I want that the end user specified, and it's going to precede that database with a bunch of default data that's specific to Blog Engine. So if I look in my VMM library, what I'm going to do here is add a SQL script for execution. It looks like the network's playing catch up again. And I'm going to say that I want it to run after the database has actually been installed. So we're just going to give this a second to catch up. So if I needed to execute something before the database had been installed to sort of seed SQL Server, I could do that. But in this case, I'm going to tell it to execute after the database has been installed. So it's going to be a post-install T-SQL script. Again, network's just a little slow. Any other questions while we're waiting for the network? Okay. I'll just check and see if it wants me to reconnect one more time. So we'll try that. Seemed to work last time. Just to be safe, I will fire up my laptop here in case we hit this issue again. Maybe this one's going to have better luck. I'm going to switch back to the slide deck while this is attempting to connect. Just see if we do have any more slides. Well, I don't think we do. Okay, we have one more, which hopefully if I can reconnect, we'll get back to. After that template's done, what I want to show you is how you then customize the deployment. So all the places that we've put those configurable service settings, I'll show you what it looks like for the end user. Luckily, I have some screenshots, I believe, after this slide. So I'll go ahead and show you those if we can't get reconnected. And again, this would allow someone to change the computer name at deployment time if they wanted to, or change the VM name within VMM if they wanted to, and then allow them to specify all of those settings that we've set up for them as configurable service settings. And again, to recap, that will allow you to use that same template in multiple environments where you're just changing some of those values at deployment time. So when we get back to the system, hopefully we'll be able to see the configure deployment page where you will have chosen a cloud. And on the left-hand side there, that's where you'll get things where the end user can provide values for those settings that we've specified. And if I had put a default value in there for them, then that default value would show up, and they could still override it should they choose to do so. And then I would just be able to deploy that service, and we'll inject all those settings and make those changes at all places in the model. So let's switch back and see how we're doing. So it looks like we've reconnected. So we know that we're going to execute this against the Blog Engine database. And then we can pass in parameters. And if I look at that SQL script, it accepts two parameters, one for that username and one for the password. And I want to show you what that script looks like really quickly so you can see what I'm doing with my script to show you why I'm doing what I'm doing. So this is another VMM library server. And this particular VMM library server also has that T-SQL script. Now I'm just going to open it with Notepad to make it quick. And you'll see that it accepts two parameters, blogengine underscore username and blogengine underscore password. So in that script definition within VMM, I'm going to say my parameters are blogengine username equals at SQL user and log engine password equals at SQL password. And remember, those are the settings that I used in the web deploy app, in the server at V application for the connection string. So I can prompt the user one time for these two variables, and I can use it in multiple places. I could write a log file path if I wanted to, and I can also specify the run as account for this particular T-SQL script, and timeouts and whether I want the connection encrypted. And I need to select the actual SQL script, which is this Blog Engine custom SQL that I just showed you. So now what I've done is I've taken those IIS, and I have the same app profile, so I have to mark that as compatible. I've taken those IIS template, server templates, I've added some applications to it. I've had an issue with this guy. So to make things simple, because I do want to show you the configure deployment, I'll just go ahead and remove that. And then we'll go ahead and take that template, save it, and configure the deployment of it. Before I do that, I'll show you where the settings exist so for you to provide the properties of those configurable service settings, like a default value or specify whether it's encrypted or not. So we're going to go ahead and save the template, and then we'll go ahead and access the properties of that template, and we'll see where those service settings show up. Any questions based on that? Okay. So the properties of the service template will show me the service settings that I've defined. And you'll remember I defined a SQL user, password, and server. And for each of these, I can go in here and say, are they mandatory or not? Should they be encrypted or not? And is there a default value for these? I'll leave these all at the default of all being mandatory and none of them are encrypted. And we'll go ahead and check out this warning. So my library server appears to be having an issue, but that's OK. We'll see if it'll let us configure and anyway, so you can see what that looks like. Right. So my library server appears to have an issue, but we still have a few minutes, so let's go and look at that. So in the fabric of VMM, I have this particular server, and this server looks like it's not responding at the moment, and that's where those files are in the library server. So I'm not able to deploy that. But what I can do is switch over to a different VMM system so that I can show you that. So this is another SP1 pre-beta build of VMM. And my library here, you see I have a number of service templates as well. And the one that I was just creating for you is actually this one called Distributed Blog. So if I go ahead and just configure the deployment of this one, I give it a name and I choose where I want to deploy it to. I'll just say my production environment. And what's going to happen is our placement engine is going to run. It's going to look at all the requirements of the tiers. What kind of VHDs do they have, the memory requirements, processor requirement. It's going to figure out, can I actually place this service? And it has, so I've gotten a data tier and an IIS tier, so a server tier. And you can see those three properties that I modeled in that template for you have shown up here. And they're all given this red X showing me that they're required, essentially. They're mandatory. So here I would just specify, I didn't mark it as encrypted or else it would mask out here. But I can give it a password that I want. The SQL server, which in this case is going to be this particular SQL server. So I could just go ahead and actually copy that name if I wanted to. And then a SQL user. So I'll just say it's MySQL user here. And then I just go ahead and deploy. And an instance of this service is now going to go ahead and deploy into my environment. Now that can take, since we're actually spinning up virtual machines for these, it can take 20, maybe 30 minutes to get those provisioned and customized and everything else. So this is the create service job that just started for the service that I'm deploying. But what I'll do is show you in the VMM UI an existing service that's been deployed so I can point a couple things out. So here's an instance of that distributed blog application. And you can see it has two tiers, a server tier and a data tier. And the nice thing is we'll actually show you the applications that we've installed directly from within the VMM UI. And more importantly, we'll show you the values that we used for the actual properties of those packages. So in this case, when I deployed this, you can see its data source is not at SQL server or not just some arbitrary SQL server. It's the actual SQL server that I provisioned as part of this. Databases, DAX, don't have properties, but web deploy packages and server app V packages do. So here you can see that I have this service that consists of two tiers, two VMs, these applications that have been installed, and I can do things like, you know, stop it, start it, delete it, and I can also set it to a new version of a template. And what that would do is, again, allow us to diff the templates and make those changes to a running instance that happens to be out there in the environment. And then the last one that I'll show you, because we do have 5 minutes left, and I'll go back to my other VMM system. Even though my library server is unhealthy, I should be able to show you this other template. I have this template that I built for a web farm, and this one doesn't include any applications in it, right? It's just a bunch of scripts. And I have a primary tier and a secondary tier, and you'll notice that they have application deployment orders of 1 and 2. And if I drill into the primary tier, you're going to see that, again, there's no applications being installed. I'm simply executing some scripts. And I think it's only one script, actually. And this script is calling this create farm CMD. And again, you can also use configurable service settings as parameters to script. So in this case, I'm going to ask the user at deployment time for a user and password and the name of the primary server, right? And for my secondary tier, which has an application deployment order of 2 and is also marked as a scale-out tier, I'm going to go ahead and execute a different script on machines that come up in that tier. And that script is called add server CMD. So if I open up the custom resource, which is create web farm custom resource, this one I believe is on my default VMM server in the library. There's a create web farm custom resource, and you can see it has a bunch of files. It's got VB script files, it has PowerShell script files, and it has those two CMDs. So the first one, the create farm CMD, if I look at it, remember I asked for a username, password, and the primary computer and the primary tier's computer name. So what I'm doing in this one CMD file, right, when I deploy an instance of this VM, it's going to go ahead and execute MSI exec, and it's going to install the web deploy framework because I need that for my web farm. It's going to install the web PI launcher, so the Windows Platform Installer launcher, and install that. It's going to install the web farm framework. It's going to call a VB script to go ahead and configure the firewall. It's going to enable the IIS remote management service, make sure that service is started, and then it's going to use the web farm services PowerShell commandlet to go ahead and call this PowerShell script, and it's going to pass in the values that I asked the end user for user, password, and primary machine. And if I look at the create farm PowerShell script, that's going to take those. It's going to, again, use the web farm snap-ins PowerShell framework to actually create a web farm for me. The secondary tier machines are very similar. And if I look at the add server CMD, it installs those same prerequisites, and then it calls a different PowerShell script called invoke. And that just calls this add server PowerShell script. And what that does is it takes any new machine in this tier and adds it to the existing web farm. So what I've done by using a service template is I've created a shared web farm in my environment. And the secondary tier, again, I can add and scale out the tiers of this web farm as I need to based on load. And if I look at this VMM server's VMs and services that are deployed, you can see that I have this instance of production web farm that was deployed from that template, webfarm 1.0, and it has two tiers, primary and secondary. So now I can go ahead and deploy web deploy applications with SP1 to that existing environment. So I could have a service template that only has my Blog Engine application and my SQL data application, not create any VMs, just deploy them to existing VMs. And I'll actually walk through that on Thursday in the MGT 317 session. So there's still about a minute. If there's any questions, I'll stick around also. Happy to ask questions if you just want to ask them offline. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time. There is a question here. I'm sorry? So the question was, when you use the web interface to deploy services, and I assume you mean System Center App Controller, which is really, so our self-service portal, we still shipped one with VMM 2012 RTM, but it's really just about single VM management, and that self-service portal will go away. And the solution for VMM self-service is System Center App Controller. If you use App Controller, everything about services in terms of those configurable settings, they will get surfaced to the end users, yes, at deployment time. And you can use App Controller to service your services, upgrade them, roll them back, and so forth. So again, I'll stick around for a few minutes. Thank you very much.